Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Freemasonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. I'm your host, Brother Robert Johnson. This is episode 187. In the news this week, I just want to say many thanks to the Brothers of Palatine Lodge for having me out, as well as having a few other brothers out to present last Tuesday. It was an amazing event, really cool, and I hope your tradition of the fourth Tuesday Education Lodge carries on with great success. If you're wondering what I'm talking about and you're looking for something to maybe to spice up your Masonic Lodge meetings, this particular lodge, Palatine Lodge in Palatine, Illinois, actually opens their lodge on the fourth Tuesday of every month just for education. The lodge is opened on the first degree, people present, and the lodge is closed, and that's it. And you would think that attendance may be up or down, but let me tell you, it is up. We had over 30 people in attendance that night, I believe. It was pretty fantastic, so many thanks to those guys. I wanted to say, check out the interview that I did with Brother Rob Lewis on episode 185. It was a fantastic interview. I also want to say, please go get his audiobook, The Pact. I got a copy of the audio version, and I'm listening to it now, and it's just phenomenal. The writing is good. It keeps it going. I didn't want to get out of my car to go into work. I wanted to keep listening. So definitely check that out. It's really cool. Please don't forget about Birmingham Lodge's auction. So if you want to help out, visit the link in the show notes. I also want to remind everybody that I do have copies of Tales from the Craft by illustrious Brother Stephen L. Harrison for sale in print. So it's on the WCY store. They are $18, and that is a match of Amazon's price. Anywhere in the continental US, I will ship it. It's a flat rate, $18. If you are international, I have to charge $25, and that goes out anywhere else in the world for $25. So check those out if you'd like. I can personalize it from my library to yours if you'd like. I can leave it plain, whatever you would prefer. I want to say the WCY lapel pins are in production, and thanks to those who have pre-ordered. We've sold a ton of pre-orders already. I'm really excited about this. I can go ahead and let you guys know that there will also be three other items launching with the lapel pin. They will carry the same logo, so you may be able to guess what those things are if you remember what two of the other items were this last time. But not only are we launching maybe those, but one additional piece, and you'll have to just wait and see. I think they're pretty cool, but those are going to be limited. Pins, not so limited. The other three items are limited to actually 25 of each of those, so those are going to be pretty hard to come by. And if you just can't wait and you have to have a WCY lapel pin and the pin isn't out, we do also have the button pins. Those are $5. I send out orders every single Monday. If you've ordered a button pin or a book and you haven't received it and it's been a little while, go ahead and shoot me an email at wcypodcast@gmail.com and let me know. I'm pretty sure I've sent out everything. I did have one that I overlooked, and I do apologize, and that is going out ASAP. So thank you very much. Also, after the paper, I wanted to say stay tuned for the Freemason Minute with illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison. This week is a special one, sure to make you feel and connect with the craft. And without any further delay, let's jump right into the first paper of this week. This one is called Midnight Revelation by worshipful brother Harry M. Lerbach. This article was originally published as an editor's comment under the heading, quote unquote, a typical meeting. In the Masonic Tribune, a privately owned publication in Seattle, Washington, worshipful Brother Lerbach is the editor of the Masonic Tribune. We thank him for the privilege of reprinting the article as a short talk bulletin. Last night, I attended my lodge for the last time until we meet again in September. We conferred the Entered Apprentice degree on three candidates. It was to the delight of the senior members present because most of the chairs were filled with young, energetic Masons, most of whom who have been Master Masons for a year or less. I was chosen to give the lecture, which I did in a reasonably good fashion, although I got my tongue toasted a couple of times. There was a fair attendance and several visitors, including one from California. At the refreshment table, he noted that there was considerable difference in our work and that of his home lodge, but still consistent enough that he had no difficulty in following the work. There was a visiting master present who brought along an entered apprentice of his own lodge. There was a past master present, the father-in-law of one of the candidates. Good fellowship abounded, and everyone got a few moments to tell a story or to say a few words to the candidate, who, in turn, got to give their impressions. In short, it was a typical meeting that has been enacted in my presence hundreds of times. For some unknown reason, however, it seemed different. As I sat there, visiting with my brethren, something bothered me. The faint yet clarion tone of tinkling bell was sounding in the back of my head, as if to remind me of something.
What was it?
Was it because the work, which is always good, was perhaps a little better? Was it because I was happy to see so many young brothers actively participating? Was it because I kept my big mouth shut? Which is unusual, because I was in a semi-metaphysical state. What is it, anyhow, that keeps me going back to my lodge week after week, year after year, to watch and assist in performing the same ritual over and over again? I like to perform good ritual and see my brothers do it, but that's not the reason. I like the fellowship and the camaraderie, but that's not it either. We have a new, nicely furnished temple, warm in the winter and cool in the summer, but that's not more than a small portion of my ardor. Still seeking an answer, I went home and wearily climbed into bed. I switched on the 11 o'clock news to see if any new catastrophes had developed, and watched the same drowsy, distasteful repetition of news that I had seen earlier in the evening. Boring repetition, I thought, and switched out the light to get some much-needed rest. The news is getting as repetitious as degree meetings, but at least I don't have to watch it. Suddenly, I bolted upright in bed. Is that the answer? Is it because I don't have to go to lodge meetings that attracts me to them? Is it because I don't have to spend hours and hours learning ritual that I do it? Is it because I don't have to be a Mason at all that piques my desire to be the best one I can possibly be? No doubt these are reasons born of my natural love of freedom, but they still pose the perplexing problem of why. Suddenly the faces of the three candidates flashed before my mind. Eager, interesting, and totally perplexed, they were ready to learn the first lessons in Masonry as I began the lecture. As many times as I have delivered it, I always try to do so, as if I was a teacher giving a lesson to an individual student, using the best possible dictation and clarity of speech. But I stumbled a couple of times. I must give more study to that passage, so as not to interrupt their train of thought. They must receive this knowledge properly, and it was up to me to do it. And I thoroughly enjoyed doing it. Reason number one, after lodge closed, each candidate came up and shook my hand with the usual remark, "Boy, I don't know how you can remember all that work." They are sincere. They are visibly moved. They have started on their journey to a Master Mason. Reason two, in my revelry, the thought occurred to me, what if Masonry didn't exist? What if there never had been any society such as Freemasonry? What would those of us do who love to teach the craft and to follow? The question may be moot, because without Masonry, there probably would never be an America. But just supposing there had never been any Masonry, and that somehow our country got established and our lives were pretty much as now, how much would you and I miss it? If, of course, we had never heard of it, we would not miss it at all. But our lives would be inexorably different. We would not be able to communicate our love for our fellow man without Masonry. No church, no neighborhood, no community, no nation can be even a small measure of cohesive action without its influence. If you are going to insist that there are other fraternities and other clubs, churches, and social societies that you can turn to, forget it. For Freemasonry is the foundation stone of both ancient and modern civil society. Its influence actually led to the formation of every other fraternal society in existence today, and in large measure most of the denominations of churches, not only in this country, but worldwide. It is popular to think, for instance, that the British Empire brought Masonry to worldwide existence, yet the secret societies of the Hindus and the Chinese, which bore striking resemblance to Freemasonry, existed long before Rudyard Kipling's time. The recitations can be repeated endlessly. This is why Masonry will never die. Nor is it within the power of any man or nation to kill it. It exercises too great an underlying influence on civilization to be thwarted, and when the time comes that its influence is sorely needed, the world will once again turn to it, to embrace its principles and practices and its precepts. For after all, Masonry simplified is the golden rule, number 3, in the Ten Commandments. This is why I'm proud to be a very small cog in the vast machinery of Masonry, to assist wherever I can to bring a better life to my brethren, wheresoever dispersed. Reason number 3. I figuratively winked at the three candidates, rolled over, and got the best night's sleep in a long time. Notes. Where 1, 2, and 3 are references, he is talking about other short talk bulletins. Number 1, see Short Talk Bulletin 863, Some Lodges Are Different, and 134, Ritual Differences. 2, see Short Talk Bulletin 359, What Should a Mason Know About Masonry? And number 3, Short Talk Bulletin 12, number 48, Golden Rule in Freemasonry. Postscript in regards to the article by Nixon Waterman. It's the kindly hearts of the earth that make this good old world worthwhile. It's the lips with tender words that make the care-erasing smile. And I ask my soul this question when my goodly gifts I see. Am I a friend to as many men as have been good friends to me? When my brothers speak a word of praise, my wavering will to aid, I ask if ever their long, long ways my words have brighter made. This eager, earnest plea, make me a friend to as many men as are good, staunch friends to me. All right, now I ask you to support the show. If you like listener-supported education, then you may want to check out some of the ways to support this show. We have a few different ways, one of course being our applications, which are available on Windows phones, on Apple phones, and on Android phones. The links to the apps are on our website, wcypodcast.com. The main feature about buying our app is that you get the papers that we read on the show via PDF through the application, and we also give you a Masonic wallpaper every single week, so check those out. You can do some shopping, whether on onnit.com, which is your source for healthy living supplements and workout equipment, or you can check out freemasonryart.com, which has some great artwork by Brother Juan Sepulveda, or check out freemasontees.com. And check out some amazing Masonic t-shirts. All three of those websites are great places to go for some shopping. If you use coupon code WCY at checkout, you'll get 10% off, and they send a little bit back to the show to help keep those lights on. If you're interested in supporting the show with a button pin, you can do so for a donation of $5. Just check out the shop on the WCYpodcast.com and check that out. If you're into the full-blown, really cool lapel pins that we've got going on, which are solid brass with a nice enamel pour over the top. They've got 24-karat gold plating. It's very little gold, but it's still really nice. The clasp on the back is not your typical butterfly clasp. It's an E-clasp so that it's not going to fall off. If you're interested in that, the pin is $10. It's $2 to ship, and they will be shipping late April, early May. So a brand new lapel pin for the springtime. Also, if you don't want anything in return, you just want to donate to the show, you can obviously just check out PayPal. You can do the PayPal direct donation, which lets you donate any amount you choose, whether it's $1 or $2, whatever. It is a very nice way to support this show, and we sure appreciate it, as well as everybody else. You are, at that point, a producer of the show by helping us out, and we are grateful. So, with that, let's go into this week's segment with illustrious Brother Stephen L. Harrison.
The following is based on a true incident that happened in my Masonic Lodge. Names have been changed to protect the innocent, even though no one was innocent. It was first published on the Midnight Freemasons blog, and it's about the aftermath of a dinner we had at the lodge and a crazy idea that didn't work out so well. So with many apologies to Brother Robert W. Service, and a poem he wrote about the cremation of a guy named Sam McGee, I give you Tyler Pete and the Stairlift Chair. There are strange things done in the lodge, my son, by the wardens and stewards and such. The kitchen crew has stories for you that would make you lose your lunch. The banquet nights have seen such fright, but the scariest night, I swear, was the 4th of July when things went awry and Tyler Pete crashed the stairlift chair. Now that Tyler Pete, he had two flat feet. He'd been there since time began. No one cares when he went through the chairs, but he was master way back when. He moved around slow, yet gave it a go as the evening's chores accrued. But he'd let you know with a tale of woe, dishes I don't want to do. On the 4th of July, we had cake and pie and heaps of Masonic green beans. The lodge was well fed, too much food, they said. Have to take it home, it seems. They packed it all up on plates and in cups and sat it all by the door. There were many loads to get on the road, all stacked from ceiling to floor. Now that Tyler Pete with the two flat feet was still as sharp as a tack. Oh, I know, he said with his arms outspread. We'll put it all in a stack, and the stairlift chair will take it down there. It cannot fail, I swear. In no time at all, we'll get to the hall at the bottom of the stairs. So he packed it up, every plate and cup, and balanced it without fear. Then he hit the switch, but a little glitch made the whole load buck and veer. Well, the chair, it stopped, but the load atop shot out like a cannonball. The whole pile of trash dropped down with a crash. A big, hot mess of a fall. At the very bottom, there was a problem. It was our big plate glass door. The big ball of goop, pie, cake, beans, and soup exploded through with a roar. And glass and our food on the street it spewed. Cars crashed in slime and meringue. The last crash was shrill, but then it was still. The mishap stunned the whole gang. Now old Tyler Pete said, "It's not defeat. There's a good side to it all. It may be a mess, but really we're blessed. Let's try not to be appalled. It's really a boon, as you will see soon. The good side of this shines through. I'm happy, you see, and soon you will be. The dishes we don't have to do. There are strange things done in the lodge, my son, by the wardens and stewards and such. The kitchen crew has stories for you that would make you lose your lunch. The banquet nights have seen such fright, but the scariest night, I swear, was the 4th of July when things went awry and Tyler Pete crashed the stairlift chair." For the Whence Came You podcast, I'm Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
All right, just a reminder that if you enjoyed that, please go onto our website and check out the limited edition shop to get a copy of Stephen's book, Tales from the Craft. Again, we matched Amazon's price at $18, and I'll ship anywhere in the USA for that. I'll ship it internationally for $25, and I think you're really going to enjoy the packaging on it. It's packaged very classical. It's worthy of an unboxing, I'd say. So we'll go right into this week's famous Freemason, Lyndon B. Johnson. So, U.S. President Johnson was from City Lodge number 561 in Texas. Now, I have made it a point mostly to never cover U.S. presidents. Why? Because they're already pretty well known. However, this one was interesting to me for more than a few reasons. First, he received his entered apprentice degree only. And second, because he was a president. But third, and perhaps this is the conspiracy theorist coming out. Of course, I'm joking there, but there are a multitude of conspiracy theories about Johnson and his involvement in the JFK assassination. But before we jump into that stuff, let's talk a bit about who Lyndon Johnson was and what he is known for. So Lyndon Baines Johnson was born August 27th in 1908, and he passed away on January 22nd, 1973. Often referred to as LBJ, was the 36th President of the United States from 1963 to 1969, a position he assumed after his service as the 37th Vice President from 61 to 63. Johnson, a Democrat from Texas, served as the United States Representative from 37 to 49 and as a United States Senator from 1949 to 61, including 6 years as Senate Majority Leader, two as Senate Majority Whip. He campaigned unsuccessfully for the Democratic presidential nomination in 1960, but ran for vice president with John F. Kennedy, heading the ticket for the 1960 presidential election. After their election, Johnson succeeded Kennedy following his assassination on November 22nd, 1963. He completed Kennedy's term and was elected president in his own right in the 1964 election, winning by a large margin over Barry Goldwater. He is one of four people who have served in both offices of executive branch as well as in both houses of Congress. Johnson was strongly supported by the Democratic Party, and as a president, he designed the Great Society legislation upholding civil rights, public broadcasting, Medicare, Medicaid, environmental protection, aid to the education, the arts, urban and rural development, and his war on poverty. Assisted in part by the growing economy, the war on poverty helped millions of Americans rise above the poverty line during Johnson's presidency. Civil rights bills signed by the Johnson banned racial discrimination in public facilities, interstate commerce, the workplace, and housing, and the Voting Rights Act guaranteed full voting rights for citizens of all races. With the passage of the Immigration and Nationality Act in 1965, the country's immigration system was reformed, and all national origin quotas were removed. Johnson was renowned for his domineering, sometimes abrasive personality, and the Johnson treatment, his aggressive coercion of powerful politicians in order to advance legislation. Johnson infamously, though, reluctantly escalated American involvement in the Vietnam War. In 1964, Congress passed the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution, which granted Johnson the power to use military force in Southeast Asia, without having to ask for the official declaration of war. The number of American military personnel in Vietnam increased dramatically from 16,000 advisors in non-combat roles in 63 to 550,000 in early 1968, many in combat roles. American casualties soared and the peace progress bogged down. Growing unease with the war stimulated at large, angry anti-war movement based especially on university campuses in the U.S. and abroad. Johnson faced further troubles when summer riots broke out in most major cities after 1965 and crime rates soared as his opponents raised demands for quote-unquote law and order policies. While he began his presidency with widespread approval, support for Johnson declined as the public became further upset with both the war and the growing violence at home. The Democratic Party split in multiple feuding factions, and after Johnson did poorly in the 1968 New Hampshire primary, he ended his bid for re-election. Republican Richard Nixon was elected to succeed him, as the New Deal coalition that had dominated presidential politics for 36 years collapsed. After he left office in January of 1969, Johnson returned to his Texas ranch, where he died of a heart attack on January 22, 1973. Historians argue that Johnson's presidency marked the peak of modern liberalism in the United States after the New Deal era. Johnson is ranked favorably by some historians because of his domestic policies. So that gives you a broad idea of the scope of his presidency and everything else that he had done up to that point. So what about these conspiracies? Well, here are some excerpts that I've pulled from various articles. For instance, Washington, October 17, 2014. It has been widely reported that Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis, widow of President John F. Kennedy, shared with family members that she was certain that Kennedy's vice president, Lyndon Baines Johnson, arranged to have her husband murdered. Soon, that conclusion will be heard in the late First Lady's own words, because audio tapes recorded of the discussions with historian and close family associates Arthur Schlesinger Jr. between March and June of 1964 will be released and excerpts featured on an upcoming ABC News program in November, marking the 50th anniversary of President John F. Kennedy's assassination in Dallas. The tapes, which insiders describe as featuring Mrs. Kennedy's disclosures of JFK affairs and her romantic liaisons in retaliation, also reportedly reveal her conviction that LBJ, with a cabal of associates and Texas businessmen, orchestrated the plot culminating in the Kennedy assassination. This is in contrast to the account of these interviews in Barbara Lemming's biography of Mrs. Kennedy, The Winter of Her Despair. The establishment theory of Kennedy's assassination, arguably the most controversial event in American history, is dubbed the Lone Gunman. It is the conclusion of the Warren Report commissioned by newly sworn-in Lyndon Johnson and chaired by the Chief of Justice of the Supreme Court, Earl Warren. It concludes that Kennedy was shot by Lee Harvey Oswald, a disturbed ex-Marine who exhibited erratic actions and behavior, that Oswald shot the president from the sixth floor of the Dallas Book Depository building. Just a side note that wasn't listed here, everybody seems to talk about the Warren Report as the final say on that actual assassination, but there was the House Special Committee on Assassinations, which was formed afterwards, which actually gave the official declaration about that, and they did rule that it was a conspiracy. So just some interesting things there. If you have any inclination to research it further, all you have to do is Google search it, but just be forewarned, don't go too far down the rabbit hole. What we've presented here is some pretty interesting stuff nonetheless. But that's it for this week, so please find us on Facebook, check us out on Twitter, you can find us on Google Plus at the email address wcypodcast@gmail.com. You can email me there or at admin@wcypodcast.com. Please check out the Midnight Freemasons 3 times a week for amazing content. We have 3 articles that come out every single week. 52 weeks a year. So I'd say it's pretty awesome. Got great content all the time. Please don't forget about the Masonic Roundtable going live on Tuesday nights at 10, 9 central. You can find us on Google Hangouts, or you can check it out as a rerun on YouTube under the Masonic Roundtable channel. Don't forget about Steve Harrison's Tales from the Craft book. It's an amazing book. It is sure to captivate you. And if you get some writer's block, you want to write about something cool and Masonic, all you got to do is pull one of those, open the book, and put your finger at any article, and you can read two paragraphs on something that will surely make you want to research it more and dive even deeper. Very cool stuff. And with that, guys, stay on the level. Thanks for buying those pins. From whence came you? I'm Robert Johnson.